From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Good afternoon, Mid-Michigan. Man, oh man, does it feel good to be back. Welcome to Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. Boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. That's right, you have probably heard the news by now, but Ndamukong Suh is going to be no longer a Detroit Lion. How about that, folks? Suh is supposedly going to Miami. We'll talk about that. We'll also recap the weekend that was for the MSU men's and women's basketball team. Also, we'll be diving into weekend winners, talk about the incredible year that the MSU hockey team is having as they now sit in the driver's seat in the Big Ten Conference, and we'll be talking a little girls' high school basketball action, and we'll be inviting head coach of the DeWitt Panthers girls' basketball team, Bill McCullen. All of that and so much more, as well as take your calls all the way up until 2 o'clock, but as custom here on Current Sports, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this March 9th. All right, folks, well, number 90 is no longer a Detroit Lion. Defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh is expected to sign with the Miami Dolphins. Reports say that Suh will receive $114 million, with $60 million of that being guaranteed moolah. Now, that's approximately $19 million over six seasons. Did the Lions totally blow this deal? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls in just a sec. All right, the Detroit Pistons, folks. The skid continues for the Detroit Pistons. The team lost to the offensively challenged Charlotte Hornets last night at home. 105-101 the final. Reggie Jackson scored 20 points on 7 of 12 for shooting in the first half. He was held to 5 points on 2 of 9 shooting in the second. He had 7 assists. Greg Monroe also chipped in with 18 points, 11 rebounds. Andre Drummond had 16 points and 5 boards. The Pistons are now 5 games in back of the 8th and final spot in the Eastern Conference with just 20 games remaining. All right, the Boston Bruins, folks, they scored 4 times during power plays in Sunday's matinee at TD Garden, 2 of them while the Red Wings had the extra skater. To hand the Wings a 5-3 loss is the first time all year that the Wings have dropped 2 straight in regulation. And Gustav Nyquist, Luke Glendening, and Marek Legutli, they scored as the Wings tried hard to pull off another rally, outshooting Boston 17-7 in the third period, but it was just not enough. The Wings are back in action tonight against the Edmonton Oilers. Puck drop is set for 7:30 p.m. Well, Shane Green, the last Detroit Tigers starter to make his spring debut, Green had a rough outing on Sunday in Detroit's 14-9 loss to split squad Houston Astros at Joker Merchant Stadium. The Tigers' offense, they've reached double digits in hits for a second straight day. That's 13. But the pitching, including Green, hit yet another rough patch in the spring as the Astros scored in 8 of 9 innings and put up a scoring high 20 base hits. Now, Tigers shortstop Jose Iglesias, he was scratched before the game after being struck by a line drive on the right shin during batting practice. Now, x-rays taken Sunday came back negative, and he is listed as day-to-day. Over the weekend, the MSU men's basketball team, they barely squeaked out a win over Indiana to close out the regular season, a 74-72 win over Indy. Michigan State enters the 2015 Big Ten Tournament in Chicago this week as the number 3 seed. Now, the Spartans will open play on Friday night, approximately 9 p.m. Eastern time, against the winner of Thursday's game between Ohio State and the winner of Wednesday's game between number 11 Minnesota and Rutgers. Now, keep it locked throughout the week to WKAR.org for our coverage out in Chicago as engineer Alex Sharg and I will be making the trip. All right, ninth seed at Michigan State women's basketball team. They fought hard from start to finish and battled a tough top-seeded number 3 and 4 nationally ranked Maryland squad in the Big Ten tournament quarterfinal before falling 70-62 Maryland Friday at the Sears Center Arena. Now, Maryland will go on to win the tourney championship over Ohio State last night, 77-74, the final. Freshman Aubrey Dawkins' career-high 31 points and senior Mac Bielfeldt's first career double-double helped the University of Michigan men's basketball team wrap up its regular season with a 79-69 win over Rutgers on Saturday afternoon. Now, with the win, the Wolverines secured the number 9 seed in the Big Ten tourney and are scheduled to play either Indiana or Illinois on Thursday at 11 a.m. Chicago time on the Big Ten Network. All right, last but certainly not least, the Lansing Community College men's basketball team. They picked up a close win against Grand Rapids Community College in the District 9 tournament championship game. The squad won 79-72. The win qualifies the team for the national tournament that will be held in Dansville, Illinois. Games start on March 17th, and matchups will be announced later on today. Holt High School alum Colin Jones was named MVP of the tourney. Javon Haynes was all-tournament, and Coach Mike Ingram was named Coach of the Year in the district. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in right now, give your thoughts on any of those, you know the number, 517-355-9527. Oh, man. Yeah, I can see Ndamukong Suh right now sitting on the beach, probably sipping a margarita and just enjoying the life. Oh, Miami is certainly a city that is certainly contagious, and it's one of the most beautiful cities. I actually got a chance to go to Miami. Man, when was that? That was about a few years back, my senior year trip for spring break. Man, oh, man, I had a great, great time. And now Miami is the recipient of one of the best defensive players in all of football. Welcome to Current Sports, folks. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. If you're just now tuning in and didn't get a chance to hear about the news, and I'm pretty sure you must be living under a rock if you haven't heard the news by now, Ndamukong Suh will be a Miami Dolphin, folks. He is expected to sign with Miami. Reports say that Suh will receive $114 million with $60 million of guaranteed money. That's approximately, folks, $19 million over the next 6 years. That contract is the richest for a defensive player in the history of the National Football League. It's certainly news that is riveting and has, of course, had many Detroit Lions fans out there sort of just shaking their head because they simply just can't believe that the Lions couldn't make something happen when it comes to Suh. Now, I'll tell you what, first off, I want to bring in, of course, Alex Sharg, our engineer here on Current Sports. First off, my man, before we dive into this, happy Monday. How you doing?
I'm doing well, but I'm a little burnt, Al. I was away for the weekend seeing some family down south in the Florida area.
Yeah, speaking of Miami, right? Exactly.
Speaking of Miami, and I was laying on my back. It was a nice sunny day, and I fell asleep for 4 hours. And I woke up, and I walk up to my bedroom. And I look in the mirror, and it did not look like the Alex Sharg that was on the air last week. It looked like a, I'm trying to think of a good comparison here. I'm really red today. My whole face is red.
Right, right.
I'm red all over.
It's like you're a medium rare steak, I guess you could say. You know what
I mean?
Yeah,
that's right.
But I tell you what, you walked in, man, and I kind of had to chuckle because, yeah, I mean, like, the left side of Alex's face, folks, is, of course, you can't see us here
like
in Radio Land.
I'm like the guy in Batman, the half-faced guy.
Yeah, kind of. Like, what is it, Two-Faced? Yeah, you're kind of like Two-Faced right now because you're kind of burnt on your left side. But still, you got to go out to Florida this weekend. Yeah. Of course, Isaac filled in for you on Friday. We had a great time
on
Friday.
And what made it more upsetting was I'm sitting in Florida, and I see on my phone on Sunday, Ndamukong Suh signs with the is expected to sign
right
with the Miami Dolphins, and my face got a little bit more burnt. It started to hurt a little bit more, man. What a bummer, right?
You know what? But, you know, let's be honest here. This really isn't a surprise. The writing has been on the wall for a deal other than the Lions to be made for quite some time now. You know, when I saw it because this broke actually Sunday afternoon. And it's so funny because I was actually reading the paper, reading the Free Press. When I got the news, it flashed on my phone, and I'm reading about the possible teams that will be vying for, of course, Sue to come to their teams. And again, the Free Press, they printed Sunday morning, and the news came out Sunday afternoon. So I'm reading about all these possibilities, and then the hard news came out that Sue would sign with Miami. But you know what? You know, it's really interesting because we're really diving into this conversation. Again, folks, you can weigh in on this conversation right now. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I'll tell you what, this really kind of falls on the Detroit Lions' shoulders. And the reason I say that is because I'm going to break it down right now, because the Lions, you know, this really is the fruition of just bad contractual moves in the front office by the Detroit Lions. Point blank, period, folks. Because if you look at it, again, the Lions decided not to franchise tag Ndamukong Suh, and for good reason. Because if they did, folks, we're talking $26.9 million. That just takes Detroit out of the game completely when it comes to free agency. And we all know that, okay, he's certainly a big name. I mean, he proved that he is a catalyst when it comes to the defense. He anchored that defense. He was the leader of that Detroit Lions defense. And again, with him not being a part of this team next season, the Lions are certainly going to take a step back. But that isn't the only need for the Detroit Lions. We all know they need an offensive line. That offensive line is horrid. It's among one of the worst in the league. We all know Detroit needs another running back now, seeing as though Reggie Bush is gone. They need that compliment to Joique Bell. We all know they do need a bit of a help when it comes to that secondary. If the Lions did franchise tag Sue, ladies and gents, they would not have any money to go around in the free agency and would have really gotten nobody. It would have taken them completely out the game. So it was just unrealistic for the Lions to enact the franchise tag on Ndamukong Suh. But you know what, Alex? When you're looking at the history here, when it comes to Sue, the Lions had opportunities to possibly, up until this moment, would have probably offered, if they wanted to franchise tag Sue, they probably realistically could have done it if they didn't make past mistakes. And the mistakes I'm talking about is, what's really interesting here is that when you look at Ndamukong Suh's career, and the reason that this year's franchise tag was so high for Sue was because the Lions restructured Sue's rookie deal and not once but twice borrowed money against his contract to push his cap up further year after year. And, you know, it's really interesting because when you really break this down, the Lions, what they wanted to do, and again, you know, borrowing money from Sue's contract, just it drives up his cap. So you still owe Ndamukong Suh that money, ideally coming to that number, that 26.9 number that we saw. And, you know, another thing here is when you look at it, the Lions have more than $17.3 million in dead money. Now, if you don't know what dead money is, dead money is basically money already paid to players with expired contracts, but not yet accounted for in the salary cap. And the Lions actually have the most dead money in the National Football League. Only three other teams, which are the Baltimore Ravens, the Dallas Cowboys, and the Kansas City Chiefs, have dead money to give away. They must give away, I should say. And Sue's debt money charge is more than the total of all but four other teams. So what it comes down to is the upper echelons in Detroit Lions management mismanage Sue's contract so much, again, picking from his pot, restructuring his rookie deal, twice borrowing money in that deal, to push his cap just far and above anything realistic that the Lions could have offered for Ndamukong Suh this season. And they could have, let's say if the Lions played this conservatively over Sue's career, they could have franchise tagged Ndamukong Suh at $19.4 million, which certainly is very high. Let's be honest here. That still is a high number, but at the same time, it's still less than 26.9. It's a little bit more realistic here. So, you know, when you look at it, you know, and it's an interesting article, interesting commentary written by Drew Sharp of the Free Press today. Also, Dave Burkitt did a great job of sort of just breaking down the salary cap numbers for the Lions and sort of putting it in perspective. And both of them go back to how the Lions did not handle Sue's rookie contract well or his sophomore contract, which really put them in a hole to up to this moment where, okay, Sue's about to be a free agent here. Do you want to franchise tag him to keep him around for another year? The Lions realistically just could not do that. And Sue played this. I mean, you can't blame Sue for leaving Detroit. You know, and again, you know, I say this because, you know, when it first flashed on my phone that Ndamukong Suh was not going to be a Detroit Lion, let's be honest here, it was not a surprise. It wasn't an awe moment. I guess you can say if there was an awe factor here, it's the amount of money that Ndamukong Suh got. Because, again, this is the most expensive deal that we've ever seen a defensive player acquire. Prior to that, it was J.J. Watt. Of course, J.J. Watt, something like $90 million with the Houston Texans. But, of course, Ndamukong Suh has gone on the record and told multiple personnel throughout the Lions organization that he wanted to be the highest paid defensive player in the National Football League. And he certainly gets that with this deal. And when you look at it, when it really boils down here, let's be honest here. The Miami Dolphins are competing for a Super Bowl, folks. I mean, I can't remember the last time the Dolphins were even close to that notion. You have to go back to the Dan Marino days. It was all about the Benjamins here when it comes to Ndamukong Suh. And, you know, when you look at the Lions, they offered him a pretty lucrative deal, which would still, if Suh would have took this deal that the Lions supposedly had on the table, it still would have made Suh the highest paid defensive player in the game today. It's being reported that the Lions offered Suh $102 million, $58 million guaranteed. Folks, when that boils down, we're talking like $17 million a year for Ndamukong Suh. So that is still an impressive deal that was on the table for Ndamukong Suh. But I just think he came to a point, and looking at, you know, throughout the year, I remember at the middle of last year when it was asked to Suh whether or not, you know, he wanted to be a Detroit Lion next season. Would he come back? And he said, hey, you got to talk to Jimmy. You got to talk to my agent. He gave no inclination. He didn't leave the door open at all. Didn't even leave it cracked to a possibility of Suh wanting, the key word wanting, to be back in a Detroit Lions uniform. So you kind of saw a hint right there that, okay, Ndamukong Suh is certainly going to test the free agent market, and he wants to get paid. Point blank, period. Because, again, Lions, if they had this on the table, if it comes out that the Lions offered him $102 million, $58 million guaranteed, $17 million a year, hey, and he turned it down for more money, hey, he wanted to get paid here. Point blank, period. Alex, what is your take on this, man? Because when you look at the numbers, yeah, the Lions certainly screwed up when they first had that rookie contract in the works for Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah, I've heard some comparisons of this Suh deal to the Albert Haynesworth deal when he was with the Saints earlier on. And the thing about it is, with Suh, I mean, this is bigger because, like you said, he's the highest paid defensive player now, more than J.J. Watt ever. And Albert Haynesworth, I don't know if you heard about this, but a couple days ago, he went on the record and said, hey, Suh better watch out, aside from where the money is, but look at the team he's going to. And for me, you can't worry about what team he's going to. He's getting paid, you know, big, big, big time money. So,
right.
And in contrast,
it wasn't about wins or losses with Suh in this.
The Dolphins still have a chance to be pretty good.
Right. The Dolphins are a decent team. But when you're talking about Super Bowl, the Dolphins isn't one of the teams first think about in the NFL.
Yeah, but
Ryan Tannehill certainly had a great season last year. They performed above expectations. But the Miami Dolphins haven't been a legit Super Bowl contender since the Dan Marino days.
Yeah, but that's because of their defense. So maybe this will help.
Maybe. But again, you need more than one man to change around a franchise in football.
They know that.
But the thing here, this was all about money with Suh. Again, Suh has gone on the record, folks, of telling multiple people throughout the Lions organization that Suh wanted to be the highest paid defensive player in the league. And he got it with this deal. There were other teams also in the vying for him. You had the Oakland Raiders. You had the Jacksonville Jaguars, who certainly had a lot of room to throw money at him. But the Dolphins, I mean, you talk about 114 for $60 million, $19 a year. I mean, that's unfathomed money. Will it pay off? Who knows? They do get better, though, with this deal, because just Ndamukong Suh is just a freak of nature here.
Yeah, and also, he was one of the better defensive linemen to ever be nominated for a Heisman. He was one of the defensive linemen to get nominated for a Heisman ever. So you got to give that to him as well. And in response to your thing about the franchise tag, Al, I see what you're saying, because the Lions could have, you know, tagged him and kept him on board for a year and saved money. But at the end of the day, he could have gotten around the contract if he wanted to, Al. At the end of the day, yeah, they could have offered the franchise tag.
But this thing about the franchise tag, I think a lot of people don't know what it is. When you put the franchise tag in place, you can't get out of that. You can't say, no, you're not franchise tagging me. when the Lions say they're franchise tagging you, you are stuck at least for another year.
You don't think Sue would have demanded for a
release? No, it doesn't matter.
I know it doesn't matter, but
if you franchise tag somebody, they are with that team at least for another year. It's the same thing with Greg Monroe. When we were speculating with Greg Monroe this past summer whether or not the Pistons would franchise tag him after this season. That's going to be another contract franchise tag stipulation we're going to be talking about this upcoming summer. But when you franchise tag somebody, they can't get out of it. They can be ticked off all they want, but they are with that team at least for one season.
Yeah, but you don't want that in the locker room at all.
Yeah, I understand. That's the other. I'm just talking about contractually. Yeah. Hey, you can be mad all you want.
You're absolutely with the team. Makes sense, but I don't think the Lions would even want that, and that would kind of inhibit them from even winning, in my eyes, Al. So as much as, yeah, they could have franchise tagged them, kept them on board for a year at least, or maybe at the most, they still, I don't think, would have that same attitude, that winning attitude that he had this year. I mean, you saw him on the podium. We talked about it last week. That was one of the biggest, you could see the biggest passion from Sue all year in that moment, and it showed how bad he wants to win.
Yeah, it showed that he wasn't just about all the money, you know what I mean? It showed that he definitely cared. I just think that, again, it all stems back to how during Sue's rookie year and the year after that, how the upper echelons, the front office of the Lions, I mean, they basically restructured his deal not once but twice, and they borrowed money so that they can push the cap a little higher so that they can make other moves like the acquisition of Golden Tate, like the acquisition of Reggie Bush. Once that happened, you still owe Sue that money. That's dead. They call it dead money in football. You still owe him that money, so it just drives his cap up even more. Again, if they played a conservative, let's say that the Lions didn't dip into Sue's contract at all and just left it contractually what it was. We're talking to franchise tag Ndamukong Suh. We're talking 19.4 instead of 26.9, which is still high, but it's not 26.9.
I hear you.
So, again, you can't replace Ndamukong Suh. The Lions are certainly going to miss this man.
And that's the thing is, this is kind of a thing with Max Scherzer where, okay, if he's going to get that money, you got to let him go. And that's the same thing with Suh. Oh, if he's going to get this money at Miami, just let him go.
And the Lions offer him a great deal. Yeah, I mean, $102 million, again, that still is
that's still higher than Watt.
That's higher than Watt. He still would have been the highest paid in the game defensively, and he turned it down because of the Miami
I mean, he didn't really have a choice of where he wanted to go. I mean, he got drafted to the Lions. He grew up, you know, he played at Nebraska. He probably wanted a big city at the same time, too.
Right. Him turning down $102 million, $58 million guaranteed from the Lions shows to me that he didn't want to be in Detroit.
Yeah.
He just did not want to be here. He had made up his mind that, hey, I'm leaving here, point blank, period. So,
yeah, in the meantime, what do the Lions do?
Exactly. Where do they go now? That's the next question here, because you can't replace Ndamukong Suh.
Right.
He came off he proved himself. He proved that he ideally was worth that amount of money, quote unquote. And you can't replace him. He's certainly a player that is freakishly athletic. He gives quarterbacks the blues, and he's just a juggernaut. I mean, you have to. And this is the thing about Sue. Sue's impact stems beyond the stat sheet, Alex. The double teams that Sue gets on a regular basis, we saw throughout multiple games this year for the Detroit Lions. The double teams that Sue gets frees up other players to rush the quarterback and get sacks. Sue's impact goes beyond the stat sheet. But what do the Lions need right now? So since they don't have to allocate all this money for a outlandish Ndamukong Suh contract, it frees up them to now work on the offensive line, to get a running back, to get some secondary help. And again, those are all needs for the Lions. You are not going to combat the Ndamukong Suh absence with another big name, because simply there are no other big names out there. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. It's interesting. Folks, again, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I believe we have a caller on line one. Is it who we have, Ray? Oh, it's Mike from Saginaw. Mike, how you doing?
How you doing there, L. Martin?
Very good,
I
Mike.
I just want to talk to you about, instead of talking about Ndamukong Suh, when they can declare for free agency before I talk about basketball and Big Ten basketball.
Free agency for the NFL?
Yeah.
That period is going on Tuesday.
I'm talking about
Tuesday.
How long they have to be in the league, or do they have, like, Major League Baseball have, like, 5 or 6 years before they can be free agents? Is that how it is in football, too, or what?
Well, I believe it's set up how the contract is. I think everyone's free agency period is set up. I mean, after you sign that initial contract, once you enter the league, after that contract is expired, then you automatically hit free agency. I think it differentiates with the player.
It's like, it's not based on years. It's based on how you your contract.
It's based on, yeah, exactly. It's based on your contract. Oh.
Okay, then I want to ask you about Michigan State, and I'd like to ask you about high school basketball. My Michigan State question is this: since the last game of the season where Marvin Clark and Elvin Ellis had their highest scoring games of the year, what do you think about them? Has they progressed?
I loved it. I haven't seen Alvin Ellis ever play that well. Again, he had a career high 16 points. Then Marvin Clark Jr. came and he had 14 points and 6 rebounds. I loved it, but I haven't seen, again, we haven't seen performances from those two like that all year.
Okay, and I noticed that too.
I was
watching it and I noticed that too. You think Kaminsky's a beast, is he?
Oh, yeah, Frank Kaminsky, I think he's the National Player of the Year. But the thing is, I mean, when you look at those two players and what they were able to do in the absence of Brandon Dawson, the question now begs is how consistent can they have performances like that? Now, Brandon Dawson did go on the record to say that he will be playing in the opening game of the Big Ten tournament. So we'll see how in tune will he be? How healthy is Brandon Dawson? We don't know yet because, he was experiencing concussion-like symptoms during that senior night game against Purdue. Now, when it comes to Ellis, Marvin Clark, Matt Costello, I mean, those guys have really stepped up during that Purdue game, bleeding into, of course, the Indiana game. How consistent can those guys be? We don't really know. I feel like I'm opening a different present underneath the tree every time I watch Michigan State play. And I tell you what, sometimes, Mike, I'm opening that present and I see a lump of coal. So hopefully this team can get it together. It's tourney time. And the Big Ten tourney, I think this team has to play well in order to have a lot of momentum, positive momentum, going into the NCAA tourney. But again, as far as can they continue to do that, I really don't know, Mike.
Okay. I'm going to ask you about high school. I know there's some teams in the state finished 20-0 in every league and every class division, but how would you feel if you finish with a unbeaten record and you lose your first game in the regionals?
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? That's something that I definitely want to ask, of course, head coach of the DeWitt girls basketball team, who, again, they just won a district championship on Friday with a win over Waverly. But, seeding, it comes down to seeding because it's very unfortunate sometimes, and I really think the system needs to be changed because – sometimes, you have these teams who have these great years. And, of course, everyone makes the postseason when it comes to high school hoops in the state of Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
And it comes down sometimes to you have these two great teams who play, like, in the first round of the district tournament.
Yeah,
so,
I know they do that here with Arthur Hill and Saginaw High. They play almost their first district game every year.
Exactly. And it's like you have these two great teams – and one of them are going to go out in the first round, the opening round of the district tournament? I mean, those are two teams that should be meeting way later on in the tournament bracket. So when it comes down to seeding, I definitely think that seeding needs to be implemented into high school hoops here in Michigan because it's just so unfortunate because you see and then sometimes, when those teams do get eliminated in opening rounds, it's sort of like a trolley to a district or regional championship, even for a state championship run. So I really think it needs to be changed, Mike.
Here's one more question, and I'll let you get to the rest of the show here. How many kids, since Cody Waterman played for the Michigan State, and he was a walk-on, do they ever have open trials for the football and basketball programs at MSU, especially the basketball, since we're in the basketball season? Because I go out to Saginaw Valley here in Saginaw, and I just want to know how many kids really after their high school days, instead of just playing on Division II level, they rather go to a big university and just be regular students. And I'll take it off the air. Thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike. Yeah, when it comes to walk-ons, we actually did a kind of a cool segment with Chris Cleary, who was vying to possibly become a walk-on on the MSU football team. But yes, they do hold tryouts, to answer your question. Both the MSU football team and the MSU men's basketball team, they both hold tryouts to become a walk-on. And we all actually talked to Keenan Wetzel when Keenan was on the show, who's now a senior now. He's been with the team for 4 years. And, yeah, I mean, it's really tough. And it just kind of depends on the lifestyle and the grind that you are willing to accept once you do make the team. Because, again, walk-ons don't get a lot of playing time. A lot of them end up, riding the bench maybe for 4 years for a team. It's rare when you see a walk-on who can come in and be a preeminent presence, consistent presence throughout their his or her years with the program. So it's very, very rare. And again, I don't know if I could be, you know, coming out of high school, even though I love the game of basketball, I even thought about it, you know, when I first came to Michigan State, whether I wanted to try out and possibly become a walk-on on Tom Izzo's team. What a pipe dream that would be, right? But again, you know, if you're a walk-on, you're putting in all these hours and then you're not playing. So, hey, if you're fine with that, cool, fine and dandy. But there are some players out there who feel as though they can walk on the team and work their way into a consistent role with the squad. I guess it just depends on what type of kid is trying out. Because, hey, if you want to do that and you love the game that much, hey, I'm not knocking you. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m., folks. Again, we'll be, of course, our centerpiece discussion for today's show is, of course, Ndamukong Suh. Going to Miami. How about that? Again, he will be paid the highest. He now becomes the highest paid defensive player in the history of the National Football League. What do you think about it? 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll be inviting our guest for today's Current Sports. His name is Bill McCullen, and he is the head coach of a pretty good team. The DeWitt girls basketball team, to be exact, they are just coming off now a district championship win over Waverly on Friday, folks. Man, oh, man, you'll hear my chat with Bill in just a sec. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to Current Sports. Ladies and gents, as always, I am your host, Al Martin. Well, let's take a bit of a break from all of the Detroit Lions and Ndamukong Suh talk and talk about another big story right here in mid-Michigan. That's right, folks. We're talking about girls high school hoop district action that wrapped up, of course, last week. And we've got a special team to talk about on today's show. Now, the DeWitt girls basketball team, they have had one extraordinary season. Now, out of the 22 games played this year, they've only lost one, which thankfully came during the middle of the year and not anywhere near the postseason. On Friday, they won the Class A district title over CAAC Red Foe Waverly. And we've got Panther head coach Bill McCullen on the line to talk about it all. Bill, how you doing, my man?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks a lot, Bill, for joining us today. Now, first off, I got to ask this, because I love around this time of the year when the weather is finally starting to break and hoops in general is taking over just about every sports media platform. I want to ask you, Bill, because, of course, you being right in the midst of all of that hoopla, being the head coach of the DeWitt girls basketball team, I mean, what is the most nerve-wracking part about this March Madness?
Well, I mean, I agree with you totally. I love March as well. Just not only for high school, but you know, enjoying all the college action as well. And I think for us, it's probably a lot of people can relate to this. If you've been that senior, playing in your last game potentially, I think there's just a sense of urgency that everybody kind of feeds off of at this time of year.
Yeah, and you for as a coach, Bill, I mean, do you like that pressure? Do you like that pressure of possibly, you know, going one and done, you know, your season possibly ending? Do you thrive in that pressure?
It certainly makes it more exciting. You know, sometimes it can be bittersweet. You could have a great season and then things just don't go well on a particular night in the districts and it's over for you. For some teams, it's new life and you can get hot at the right time. And we're hoping that we kind of fit both of those right now. I mean, we've had a really good regular season and hoping to stay hot here for the tournament run.
Yeah, and you're talking about staying out. I mean, Bill, you guys have pretty much been hot throughout this entire year. Only one loss throughout the regular season. Is that really a catch-22? I want to talk about this really briefly because I find it very interesting for teams like yours that really have such a stellar regular season. Because I got to ask you, I mean, again, is it a catch-22 not dealing with much adversity in the loss column throughout the year? Would you rather have had, you know, maybe a few bumps in the road up until now to sort of prove to your team that you can deal with those waning moments?
Well, we've definitely had some close calls, and we played a pretty tough schedule throughout. I think the loss that we had back in January to Hazlitt, who was our arch rival, you know, it hurt. And I think, you know, it really, it fired up the kids. They've been very focused ever since, because they just don't want to feel that again. And you know, ever since that game, we kind of took on the mindset that we just need to play with a tournament level intensity the rest of the way. We can't afford any slips. And, you know, we were able to go back and beat them the second time, get a share of our league, and now, you know, a district title and moving on to the regionals.
Bill, how do you keep your team's head out of the clouds?
You know, we've got a pretty mature team for the most part. Five of our top six kids are very experienced. They've been on varsity for three or four seasons. So they've kind of gone through some of this stuff before. Mm-hmm. And I think they're mature enough to understand that you can't get caught up in rankings or anything else. And you got to stay focused on the next opponent.
I love that. Now, you know what, Bill? I was actually a few weeks ago talking to a good friend of mine in this business, of course, Fred Heumann over at Channel 6. I actually turned on the news one night, and I saw actually a pretty interesting coaching tactic during one of your practices. I believe you guys were doing Zumba. Am I correct?
Well, I wasn't doing it, but the girls were doing it.
Right, right, exactly. You guys were, the girls were doing Zumba, not you. I mean, you were kind of sitting on the side. But, I mean, you know, doing things like that. I mean, you, as a coach, I mean, you're trying to find different tactics to sort of motivate your team and to sort of just deviate from the norm. Because at the end of the day, I mean, if you kind of bog your team down with too much of the X's and O's, I mean, it kind of becomes kind of ho-hum after a while, right?
Well, and we had reached that point. We were well into February. And we had a couple back-to-back weeks where we didn't have a Tuesday game. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you're looking at four practices to get ready for one game that week, we just wanted to do something different. And you know, I'll give credit to Christy Drayton, our volleyball coach. She had done that with her team in the fall. And the girls really loved it. And so we surprised them with it that one day that Fred's crew came out.
I tell you what, it was great video, I tell you that, Bill. Now, as far as the chemistry goes, because looking at that video, I mean, it seems as though this team is very close-knit. What's the chemistry like between every one of these girls?
It's really good, and I've said this to a couple different newspaper reporters, too. We really haven't had a bad practice or a bad day. They get along well. They kind of push each other and hold each other accountable. You know, to a certain work ethic every day, and they spend a lot of time together off the court too. It's just been a pleasure to coach this group.
Now, I want to, of course, go back in time now, Bill, and talk about that game on Friday between DeWitt and Waverly. Again, you guys complete a season sweep of the Waverly Warriors, which isn't easy to do because Waverly had a pretty solid team this year. You know, you guys beat the CAAC Red Foe three times. I mean, how difficult is that to do in your conference?
Well, the entire conference was tough, and Waverly was certainly, you know, a tough foe for us, especially with their size, athleticism around the basket. You know, I mean, arguably, I think Bree Mobley is probably the best player in mid-Michigan, and our kids, you know, really took on that challenge three times. They have a talented sophomore, Alicia Smith, who's a very good player, and I think going to be somebody to watch the next couple of years. And you know, I just thought our kids really stepped up. You know, Friday's game, the score looked worse than it was. I mean, that was a 1-point game with about 5 minutes left, and mm-hmm. we made a little run and hit some free throws to make it look comfortable, but it was far from comfortable.
You know, many teams I've seen throughout this year, Bill, have tried to slow down, of course, as you just mentioned, Brianna Mobley, who, of course, will be taking her basketball talents to Western Michigan University next year. And, of course, Alicia Smith, who is only a sophomore. Her ceiling is so, so high. What was it about? I mean, now, Alicia, she finished with a team-high 14 points. But what was the game plan going into that game and each and every game you guys have played, you know, three times throughout the year? What's the game plan to stopping or at least containing those two?
Well, one of the things, and we said this every time we were getting ready to play them, we've got a scouting report, and if we don't box them out when the shot goes up, you can just tear up the scouting report because it won't matter.
yeah.
And the first couple of times we played them, I thought we did a better job on the glass than we did Friday night. Alicia Smith got a lot of her points off of second chance opportunities, just crashing the boards, and You know, thankfully we were able to key on Bree and try and take away, you know, some of her moves that she usually goes to and double down in the post and just try to make them move the ball and force somebody else to hurt us. And it worked out pretty well on Friday.
Now, Coach, I don't want to hammer you down too much with the X's and O's here as we segue into a different subject in just a sec, but what type of adjustments did you see, if any, from head coach T.J. Hawkins each and every time you guys played them throughout the year?
Well, you know what? They really surprised us on Friday. He came out with a box and one on our point guard, and I think that kind of slowed us down initially. Claudia Reed, our point guard, had 23 against them at their place and, you know, really, really had a great all-around game. And so they came out with that, and we hadn't necessarily prepared for that on Friday night. And so credit to our kids as we tried to kind of adjust on the fly. And we made enough shots to get them out of that. And then the second half, they went man, and we were able to kind of creep away slowly but surely. But, you know, they certainly came with a good game plan initially.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with the head coach of the DeWitt girls basketball team, Bill McCullen. Now, Bill, you just mentioned Claudia Reed, who has been stellar for you guys pretty much all season. Of course, she was in foul trouble on Friday most of the night. And you really talked about, you know, reading a report after that game, you talked about, just other people stepping up for you guys on the team, such as senior Maria Moss, I mean, who had a game-high 18 points. Was that uncharacteristic at all for her?
Well, Marie's a great player, and I think on other teams she might shine even more. She's a really good shooter, and with the box and one in particular, she was getting some looks, and she knocked down enough of them. And then she had a huge game the second time we played Hazlitt as well over there, and scored 16 and hit a big three late to really kind of key that victory. And we're really proud of her and what she's done all season. This is her third year on varsity. And then Casey Palmer, who's our other starting guard, I thought just played a really solid game. She's only 5'5", but she led us in rebounding and she's our defensive stopper. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of people step up. Alex Bilbo came off the bench, and scored 5 for us. And she's one of our other seniors that's had big minutes, throughout the year.
Yeah, certainly. That is very, very true, Bill. All right. Well, you guys have Ann Arbor Huron next. I believe that game is tomorrow, right?
Yes, it is.
Tomorrow, Ann Arbor Huron, 6 p.m. It's a state. I got to tell you, as you guys keep trucking on throughout this year, and hopefully you guys continue this incredible run for you guys, Bill, is a state championship becoming more and more attainable now in your guys' heads? Because you can pretty much reach it at this point, right?
Well, there's still several games between here and there, and it's always, you know, it's on the goal sheet, and it's something that this group has been striving for. We got to focus on Huron. It's going to be a great game, and hopefully we can get by them, and then see who's left after that. But certainly the closer you get to it, I think the more the excitement level builds.
Yeah, that is certainly true. All right, Bill. Well, I'll tell you what. Two more questions for you here, because I'm taking like a poll. Ever since this has happened to the MSU men's basketball team, throughout many times throughout this year for them, every single coach we have on here, every basketball coach, I should say, I'm throwing at least one of these questions at you. I want to talk about fouling or defending during moments in crucial moments, you know, when the shot clock, well, of course, you have no shot clock in high school hoops, but, you know, when you're up by, you know, 3 points and the other team has the ball, do you foul to put them to the line to not even give them a chance to tie the game? Or are you just defending it out? From a coaching perspective, what does Bill McCullen do?
We've had this talk before, with our staff and high school girls basketball. At least my opinion, we defend and just try not to foul. I understand at the college level and even at the varsity boys level, there are a lot of boys who can hit a contested deep three with good defense. And so I understand the people who want to foul. But usually in the girls game, we've had more success just trying to defend and get that rebound.
Now, also when it comes to the postseason format, of just high school hoops in general. Of course, every team makes the postseason. Every team has a chance. It makes districts and plays in the district tournament. Do you like the postseason format, Bill? Because, I mean, you know, I actually went to the Waverly and Okemos game the beginning of last week. And, of course, Waverly, I mean, they're such a talented squad. They ended up blowing out Okemos, a team who really struggled all year. And do you like everyone making the postseason format? And do you think that maybe seeding needs to be implemented when it comes to high school hoops in general?
I definitely think everybody needs to make it and have that opportunity. But I know there has been a lot of talk about seeding. You just look at, you know, games like Hazlett and Williamson having to face off on the first Monday. You know, these are two really, really good Class B teams that maybe could make a run, and one of them gets eliminated on the first night. So I understand where people are coming from the seeding. We've had that scenario before where we've had to face somebody, you know, right off the bat that, you know, is ranked or both teams are ranked. So I wouldn't be opposed to seeding it in some degree.
All right, well, there you have it. All right, well, Bill, on behalf of all of us here at WKR's Current Sports, again, we wish you all the luck in the world. Hopefully you guys can grace the Breslin Center 4, huh?
All right, well, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Again, there you have it. Head coach of the DeWitt girls basketball team, Bill McCullen. Again, they take on Ann Arbor Huron tomorrow at 6 p.m. All right, well, when we come back, we will wrap up, of course, our talks about this whole Ndamukong Suh fiasco. Of course, Ndamukong Suh heading to Miami, Florida to be a Dolphin. We'll also have weekend winners for you, as well as continue to take your calls all the way up until 2 o'clock, 517-355-9527. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. All right, well, welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Really briefly, before we dive into weekend winners, want to talk about the MSU men's basketball team for a sec here. Of course, the MSU men's basketball team, they concluded their regular season with a, man, they dodged a bullet against Indiana, folks, on Saturday afternoon. They beat Indiana 74-72. They now enter the 2015 Big Ten tourney. In the Shy, that's right. This week, the number 3 seed, they open play Friday night at approximately 9 o'clock Eastern time against the winner of Thursday's game between Ohio State and the winner of Wednesday's game, either Minnesota and Rutgers. As previously mentioned, we actually had Mike call in, Mike from Saginaw call in, and I tell you what, you know, Michigan State is actually getting some production from individuals who we haven't seen much of. Throughout this year, at least when it comes to production. Alvin Ellis had a career-high 16 points on Saturday. Marvin Clark Jr. chipped in with 14 points and 6 rebounds. But man, oh man, even with that being said, Michigan State, gosh, I tell you what, just closing out games has been one of the hurdles that Tom Izzo and his squad has had to deal with throughout most of this year. Looking at that game, let's go back in time. Let's go to Saturday for a second. The final, a minute and 53. Michigan State, and this has been a problem all season, free throws. Free throws, free throws, free throws. I don't know how much I can hammer those two words. Michigan State went 7-for-14 in the final minute and 53 seconds from the line. If you remember, Matt Costello, he goes to the line, looks as though Michigan State is going to close this baby out. He looks pretty confident. Travis Trice comes over to him. Gives him a bit of a pet talk. He hits him on the chest. Costello's like, hey, chill, I got this. And then what does Costello do? He misses two free throws when Michigan State is up by 3 points. Could I just hit one of those and you ideally close the game out. Don't even give Indiana a chance. 4-point game. Costello misses two free throws, and then I tell you what, man, then you start to sweat. Then you start to chew off those fingernails. And, you know, it's so crazy because, you know, Travis Trice goes to the line and has an opportunity to push the lead to 3. And Travis Trice initially misses the second free throw Denzel Valentine doesn't know, I guess it doesn't register in his brain, and ends up fouling Yogi Ferrell. And thank goodness, because Yogi could have tied the game. Yogi missed the second free throw, and Michigan State, of course, survived that game. But I tell you what, man, I just do not know how to analyze this team on a game-to-game basis, because we're seeing something different, something new from this team every game. Now, again, a positive takeaway from that game is that Michigan State is getting production from players that they normally haven't been getting production from. Again, guys, you talk about guys like Alvin Ellis, Marvin Clark Jr. How about the play of Matt Costello during that Purdue game? I mean, Matt Costello was unbelievable. So when you see other guys step up, that is certainly encouraging around this time of the year. But again, how consistent can they be? That's yet to be seen. Now, Brandon Dawson is expected to play this Friday in the opening round, at least for Michigan State's sake, in the Big Ten tourney. How healthy will he be? You just don't know, because we actually tried to talk to him after that Purdue game. He just looked kind of out of it. He was not taking any interviews because he was really sensitive to the light. He was experiencing concussion-like symptoms. If they get him back, he's certainly going to be a great addition for this team, and they need Brandon Dawson. I always say, this team will go as far as Brandon Dawson will take them. They need Brandon Dawson to be playing at a high level if they expect to go deep in the Big Ten tourney and also the NCAA tourney for that matter. So, again, I just don't know. If this team isn't shooting well, this is another thing about Michigan State's team this year. If they aren't shooting well, and if they are not getting in transition, and if they're forced, again, I've been beating this horse all year. If they're forced to run a half-court offense, it's tough. It's kind of like 50-50 for this team. So, and they got to stay healthy, too. They can't have these little injuries that have been really hurting them in the side. So, I don't know. But I tell you what, you can't argue with 18 straight NCAA tourneys, folks. 18 straight for Tom Izzo in this team. That is amongst one of the most impressive streaks in all of college sports, let alone college basketball. All right, folks, so let's transition now into our weekly Monday segment, where we look at the weekend that was in sports history. Well, very brief history. They seem as though it was just 2 days ago. And bring to you who we thought had the best weekend in sports. So we dub it our weekend winner segment. Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
That's right, folks. These were the best around this weekend in the world of sports. And I want to start off my list, Alex, with a guy who I didn't know. I didn't know that this guy was going to be this good at the next level. Draymond Green. If you have not been following his career thus far with the Golden State Warriors, one of the best teams in the NBA, right behind the Atlanta Hawks. Gosh, is Draymond Green just playing out of his mind? I mean, you know, he's such a hard worker. He's improved in every facet of his game. He's got a jump shot. He can hit down the three ball. He's in the running for Defensive Player of the Year along with DeAndre Jordan now. He's facilitating. I mean, man, is he just an animal. And his attitude, that ferocity that he plays with, that emotion, is so contagious. He actually led all scorers with 23 points in Golden State's 106-98 victory over the Los Angeles Clippers yesterday. But you know what? Not only was that a big headline, but Draymond Green has also been making headlines when it comes to his sound bites. And what I mean by that is, you know, last week I talked about how he had some choice words for Charles Barkley and NBA Hall of Famer, because Charles Barkley, you know, felt as though that Golden State doesn't have a big man, and he feels as though that Draymond Green is a bit undersized, and he feels as though Golden State won't win an NBA championship because they are too small. Draymond Green fired back at Charles Barkley and said, hey, I don't know what gives him credibility to talk because he's never won a ring. So, yeah, which was a pretty good shot. But also something happened after yesterday's game between the Clippers and Golden State Warriors, because Draymond Green, again, he had a fantastic game. He's being interviewed by ESPN's Lisa Salters. Now, during the segment, Clippers guard Dante Jones walked into view of the camera bumping Green as he went past. Green did not take the gesture kindly and told reporters this in the locker room.
It caught me by surprise. I bumped and looked. And I looked again, you know, just kind of curious, did he do it on purpose or not? So then I see the, you know, replay of it where he look at me and start by talking, then look at me again out the corner of his eye and walk right into me. I think he wanted a reaction from me, but he don't play. So me getting suspended and him getting suspended, it's different, you know. When you don't play, that's probably his role on that team, you know. So I've had that role once before in my career, a couple years ago, where, you know, but I can't afford to, you know, feed into that, where I get into it with him after the game, where, and, you know, get fined, get suspended, and, you know, hurt my team when, you know, if he gets suspended, they may not even notice, you know. So, I mean, I guess, you know, good bump by him. But, you know, I definitely expect that to be reviewed, you know, by the NBA, you know, for him to look at me and look at me again and bump me when I'm doing a post-game interview. That's really smart, too, you know, when it's on ABC. And obviously the post-game interview is the highlight of that segment, and you bump somebody. He got some camera time, which he needed because it wasn't much celebration from their bench today, so you didn't see him much. So he got the camera time that he was looking for. Just expect to be reviewed and see what happened.
Oh, boy. Bang, bang, bang. Talk about shots fired again. Draymond Green. But, yeah, he's one of my weekend winners despite the Dante Jones bump during the postgame interview. Draymond Green, 23 points, leading the Golden State Warriors over the Los Angeles Clippers yesterday. Also, I want to note here, another one of my weekend winners is Patrick Willis. If you haven't heard, San Francisco 49ers linebacker Patrick Willis is planning to announce his retirement on Tuesday. His decision to retire was reported today, of course, by Yahoo Sports. Willis has played his entire 8-year career in San Fran and was one of the top players on the Niners teams that reached 3 consecutive NFC championship games from 2011 to 2013. He was selected to the Pro Bowl in each of his first 7 NFL seasons. Not many players can say they've done that. The only defensive player since the league's 1970 merger with longer streaks to start their careers were the great LT, Lawrence Taylor, who did it 11 straight times, and Derek Thomas, who did it 9 straight. So Patrick Willis, of course, he's deciding to hang it up. Of course, he's been hampered. Last year, he only appeared in just 6 games before undergoing season-ending toe surgery. So also, Russell Westbrook with his 7th triple-double of the year with the win over the Raptors. Kobe Bryant's Muse documentary, if you haven't seen that unbelievable piece of work, you got to check it out. It's one of the best sports docs I've ever seen done on one athlete. Unbelievable stuff. Showtime actually aired it last week. I sat down and was thoroughly impressed with it last night. And weekend losers, Detroit Lions. Don't feel bad, Lions fans. Ndamukong Suh, he's a juggernaut. But this isn't the end-all be-all to Detroit's success on the gridiron, folks. All right, folks. So that wraps up today's show. I want to give a special thanks to head coach of the DeWitt girls basketball team, Bill McCullen, for joining me on today's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Monday, and be easy, people.